Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I am John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Thursday, October 6th, 2016. A U.S. rights group says the U.N. mission in South Sudan failed to protect civilians during the July violence in Juba. And President Kiir's spokesman says the trip of the first vice president to the United States is a big success.
The first vice president was able to deliver a very meaningful speech at the General Assembly in New York. And later on, you know, he went and attended Atlantic Council, that is a think tank, and also he met a number of government officials from the State Department and the Congress. And that's the engagement that, you know, it never happened since 2013.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. A rights group says United Nations peacekeepers failed in their mission to protect civilians during the outbreak of deadly fighting in South Sudan in July. The U.S.-based Center for Civilians in Conflict, or CIVIC, says peacekeepers abandoned their post or recoiled in position and then used tear gas on frightened civilians who sought shelter at the U.N. base in Juba. CIVIC says the United Nations must ensure transparency and accountability for the inadequate response its peacekeepers gave. CIVIC also says investigation into an incident in February in which peacekeepers from Ethiopia, India, and Rwanda stood by as government soldiers attacked another protection of side of civilians in Malakal, killing at least 30 civilians. According to CIVIC's, during the July violence, peacekeepers either fled or remained on their base as government forces broke into a hotel and apartment complex to brutally attack international and local aid workers. And in the weeks following the crisis, raped South Sudanese women who went outside the internal displaced persons camps in search of food and firewood. A UN peacekeeping official says the report raises a number of important issues, noting that an independent investigation of the Juba violence is due to present its findings shortly. The UN peacekeeping mission in the Democratic Republic of Congo, known by the acronym MONUSCO, says it cannot take sole responsibility for removing 750 disarmed South Sudanese fighters from the SPLA-IO. MONUSCO spokesman says, told journalists yesterday that MONUSCO flew the South Sudanese to several camps in the Democratic Republic of Congo at the request of the DRC government, which has since then given a deadline for their removal. For VOA News, Nick Long has more from Goma, Eastern Congo.
The South Sudanese combatants are men loyal to South Sudan's former Vice President Riek Machar. They crossed into the DRC on foot in August after retreating from the capital Juba in July after intense fighting with forces loyal to President Salva Kiir. Machar and his wife were with the rebels, but they've been evacuated to Khartoum. Last month, as the news of the arrival of the troops in the DRC was made public, a DRC government spokesman denied that it had allowed them into the country. MONUSCO had already disarmed the combatants and flown them from Congo's Garamba National Park to several of its bases, including one near Goma. On Tuesday, 2 weeks after the DRC defence minister visited the combatants, the government said the fighters were a security risk and gave MONUSCO 7 days to fly them out of the country. MONUSCO spokesman Felix Prosper Bass spoke with journalists Wednesday, giving them the mission's response to the ultimatum.
C'est depuis le 17 août 2016 que les autorités de la République démocratique du Congo ont demandé à la MONUSCO d'agir sur des bases purement humanitaires afin.
Bass said on August the 17th, the DRC authorities asked MONUSCO, on a purely humanitarian basis, to extract the South Sudanese combatants from Garamba Park, where 40 of them had already died of sickness, malnutrition, or wounds. Everyone agrees the fighters must leave the country, Bass said, but he did not give a date when this would happen. He rejected a suggestion from a journalist that MONUSCO had been tricked with false promises into carrying out the rescue operation.
Je ne pense pas que dans les propos de quelques autorités ou quelques porte-parole de la MONUSCO, on ait déjà dit qu'on a été payé en monnaie de singe. La MONUSCO.
Bass said he didn't recall any authority or any MONUSCO spokesman making this claim. MONUSCO did not invite the South Sudanese soldiers into the Congo, which is a sovereign country, he added.
Nous prenons acte, nous prenons bonne note de l'ultimatum qui nous a été donné par le gouvernement, mais je mets sur la table une chose, je dis...
As for the deadline, Bass said the mission has taken note, but the solution cannot come from MONUSCO alone. MONUSCO has been working with the UN headquarters, with the DRC, South Sudan and other governments in the region to find a solution, he said. A demonstration was organised in Goma last week to protest the presence of the South Sudanese fighters. Demonstrators said the country has admitted too many foreign rebel groups in the past. There have been no confirmed reports of any abuses committed by the South Sudanese combatants in the Congo. Neighbours of the base near Goma, where the fighters are living, told VOA they had not seen the rebels outside the camp. Nick Long for VOA News, Goma.
Riek Machar's spokesman James Gadet says the SPLA-IO troops in the Democratic Republic of Congo would be welcome to return to areas under the control of the Sudan People's Liberation Army in opposition. Gadet says these troops were forced by the South Sudan government to flee from Juba.
First of all, our forces do not intend to stay longer in the Democratic Republic of Congo. They went there to accompany the first vice president, Dr. Machar, when he was chased across the border. And he was also airlifted and relocated to Sudan, where he is now. So the forces were supposed to follow him and come back to our liberated areas, in our headquarters in Fadak or Kaldak. So if the United Nations can do that, we have no problem with it.
Recently, Dr. Riek Machar has called for an armed struggle against President Salva Kiir. Some people have criticized him that why would he engage in any arms insurrection, particularly when he's on record to have said South Sudanese have suffered enough?
Well, because the fighting itself has been imposed on the SPLA-IO. You know what happened on the 8th of July when he was nearly killed because President Salva Kiir wanted to assassinate him, call him to his palace, and he started shooting at his board guys and attacked his residence and chased him for 4 days in the bushes across into the Democratic Republic of Congo. And President Salva Kiir's forces have continued to attack our forces in the country. So this is a war which has been declared by President Salva Kiir to make the peace collapse. Actually, the peace agreement has collapsed. There is no SPLA-IO party now with the government led by President Salva Kiir to implement the peace agreement in Juba. And there is no transitional government of national unity for the peace agreement itself. So the peace agreement has collapsed. President Salva Kiir has declared war on us. So what we are doing to resist him is self-defense. In response to the war declared by President Kiir on us.
Well, but the situation is, if he engages in an arms insurrection, those who will be caught in the crossfire are ordinary South Sudanese. Some people are even suggesting that he should be a candidate for the International Criminal Court to be prosecuted for war crimes. What do you say to that?
Well, I think this question should go to President Salva Kiir, who has violated the peace agreement. We signed the agreement in August last year to end the war, the 2 years of war, which erupted in 2013. Signed that peace agreement with hope that the peace itself should be implemented and the people should get back to their normal lives. But what do we do? We have somebody called Salva Kiir who has declared war, who has violated the peace agreement and has continued to attack our forces. So we naturally have the right to self-defense.
That's James Gadet, spokesman for the former first vice president Riek Machar. He was speaking with VOA's Peter Clotty from the Kenyan capital, Nairobi. A spokesman for South Sudan's president Salva Kiir says the visit to the United States by a delegation led by first vice president Taban Dengai was one of the most successful visits ever taken by a South Sudanese leader since the 2013 conflict. Taban Deng attended last month's UN General Assembly on behalf of President Kiir. Taban and his delegation were in Washington this week for several meetings. Presidential spokesman Ateny Wekateny says the delegation met with State Department officials and members of the Congress, although Ateny did not specify which U.S. official met with Taban Deng.
Well, the visit of the first vice president and his delegation is the one of the most successful visits ever taken by South Sudanese leader since the eruption of conflict in December 15, 2013.
When you say one of the most successful visits, what message did you bring for the thousands of South Sudanese here in the United States?
Well, our first audience are American before South Sudanese, because most of South Sudanese are at home. And what we tell the South Sudanese who are actually in diaspora, it will not be anything we say, you know, just saying, but, you know, we will do actions that will be seen by the diaspora, you know, as discouraging. But for the Americans, we have engaged them. The first vice president was able to deliver a very meaningful speech at the General Assembly in New York. And later on, you know, he went and attended Atlantic Council, that is a think tank, and also he met a number of government officials from the State Department and the Congress. And that's the engagement that, you know, it never happened since 2013.
You are here at a time that there are reports of renewed fighting, particularly Ye River State. And some people say that perhaps the only way to free South Sudan of this continuing violence is for President Salva Kiir to step down. Well, first of all, what did you hear from the Americans that you met with? What did they tell you?
Well, the Americans has no intention to let President Salva Kiir end, you know, his tenure. The Americans wanted peace agreement to be implemented by none other than President Salva Kiir himself. You know, for those who talk about President Salva Kiir, you know, leaving power, they are dreaming. President Salva Kiir came to power through an election that was interrupted in 2013. But yet, peace agreement renewed the tenure of President Salva Kiir until 2018, when he will be going to General Assembly. The other part of your question, you talk about fighting which has taken place in Ye River. You know, the fighting which has taken place is between our forces and the bandits. These are not groups that belong to any, you know, political military organization.
My understanding is that most South Sudanese in this country, the United States, reside in Nebraska. Did you visit that state, and what did the people there tell you?
You know, we have not gone to Nebraska. We have not gone to other states apart from Washington, D.C. and New York City, where United Nations and the government of United States, you know, reside respectively. We didn't go because the purpose of coming to the United States was not to complain and go to every household that is inhabited by South Sudanese abroad. We came here for United Nations meeting and to engage the American government, which we have done successfully. We also had addressed the gathering of about 5,000 South Sudanese who converged to Washington, Double Tree Hotel, Conference Hall. We addressed a number of South Sudanese who came actually from different states, but not necessarily going to one state, particularly like the Oma or Nebraska. We did not do that.
Is it my understanding that most South Sudanese, particularly those living in on that side, like Nebraska, are against President Salva Kiir continuing in power?
No, you cannot quantify the, you know, given people, you know, dissent, because I have not gone to carry out the survey in Nebraska or any other states that people who are discontented with President Salva Kiir. But if there are people who are actually against President Salva Kiir, then it is right, their right to do so, because they are citizens, you know, and they have rights. The Republic of South Sudan as a democracy has embraced the civil liberties, and anybody has the right to say whatever they want to say.
Some of the information we are getting is that even roads coming into Juba area are not safe. So can you tell people how safe your country is?
Well, the country is safe. What is happening are isolated incidents. And there are groups of bandits that are scattered in the forest. You know, South Sudan is a very forested area in which you cannot guarantee, you know, the safety of lonely cars that are moving from Uganda or to Ye and other roads, because, you know, the roads are not safe and they are not passable in some cases. So it is very difficult. Any road which is not good always is a cause of insecurity.
Atenyue Kateny is a spokesman for South Sudan's President Salva Kiir. He was speaking with James Batty from Juba. You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, We take a look at the work of the French medical charity MSF here in Washington. That story is coming up next.
For in-depth news and analysis on events in South Sudan, tune in to South Sudan in Focus, Monday through Friday from 1630 to 1700 UTC. We are also on the web at www.voanews.com/South Sudan or download our podcast on iTunes. That's South Sudan in Focus on VOA Africa.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
are you able to rest on the weekends, or do you work throughout?
Actually, I don't rest on weekends because I'm a businesswoman. I have to run out my business throughout the weeks. Yeah, I only rest that when I'm sick. That is where I can rest. But if I'm very okay, there is nothing that I can do than running my business.
Yeah, of course, I find time to rest during weekends. Except on emergencies, I go out. But for the good part of the weekends, I normally rest at home.
As a student, you cannot have ample time to rest. So you can attend classes from Monday to Friday. And you can, if there is something that you need to study, you can study. But I cannot say that I rest throughout the weekend.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. The French medical charity Médecins Sans Frontières, or Doctors Without Borders, has constructed makeshift tents, clinics, and virtually reality dome on the National Mall in Washington, D.C., where people can get an up-close view of the global migrant and refugee crisis. MSF is encouraging people to tour the exhibition and view testimonies from refugees, migrants, and asylum seekers that were recorded all over the world. Ayen Bior visited the interactive exhibit and has this report for VOA from Washington.
Hurry up, we don't have time. I'm running out of time.
Civilians typically only have seconds to gather essential belongings when they are forced to run for refuge when violence breaks out in their neighborhood. Ahmed Abdalrazag, an MSF worker and tour guide at the exhibition, tries to recreate that experience as he hurries a group of 7th grade students taking part in the hour-long tour just blocks from the White House.
Hurry up. 25 seconds.
As the clock is ticking, the school children struggle to figure out what to take and what to leave behind. Abdalrazag, a former Iraqi refugee himself, who fled to Libya and then Tunisia, says creating that feeling of rush, nervousness, and fear was an intentional portion of the exhibition. On the National Mall are tents, almost exactly like the ones refugees live in, along with a small makeshift clinic where would-be refugees seek medical assistance. MSF also brought in a small rubber boat, like the ones typically seen carrying dozens of refugees across the Mediterranean Sea. The exhibition is designed to guide participants through some of the world's most dangerous journeys, whether it is through muddy waters to get to an IDP camp in their home country, like South Sudan, or across the high seas of the Mediterranean.
Dude, it's leaking!
The school children walk over to the approximately 8-foot-long rubber inflatable boat, where the green grass beneath it provides a stark contrast to the treacherous realities of the Mediterranean Sea, where tens of thousands of refugees and migrants have risked their lives to reach the shores of Europe. But this rubber boat, even though it's nestled in the safety of a Washington exhibit, doesn't stop the young participants from worrying. Will they all fit in the boat? Is the boat leaking? Some students wonder aloud. Some personal items they bring along must be tossed aside as they don't fit in the boat. Africa Stewart, an obstetrician-gynecologist who has worked in South Sudan for MSF, says the exhibition is designed to bring attention and awareness to the global refugee and migrant crisis. But she says unless you have lived through it, it is really difficult to capture the fear of running for your life.
We hear people telling us that the key to getting away is looking like you're not trying to get away so that your enemies don't realize that you have left. So packing things in the fold of your gowns, trying to look like you're going to the market, taking your smaller children and not necessarily taking the older children because you want to look like you're not going anywhere. So we try to replicate the idea of leaving your home. What would you take? Who would you take with you?
More than 65 million people worldwide are forcibly displaced, according to the UN Refugee Agency. They come from countries like Syria, Burundi, Mexico, and South Sudan. The political, social, or ideological issues that force refugees out of their homes are as unique as the history and geography of each country. But Stewart says the personal toll that it takes on the individuals are the same from country to country.
So we see pregnant women who have been walking and walking and walking for days, trying to get close to a hospital, trying to find, you know, adequate health care for their children. And I think that is a microcosm of all of Africa, just because as the violence changes its position, patients and families are forced to figure out what are they going to do in terms of finding adequate health care.
Participants were given cards that represent physical items central to everyday life. One card had a picture of water bottles, another a picture of shoes or family pets, money, and even a wheelchair. Diana Smith, who took part in the interactive exhibition, says she tried to pick the most practical items to bring along.
I took water, passport, shoes, because my feet are bad, prescription drugs, and a muffler for my neck. And it was horrible giving up any of those because I really vicariously felt like I was in the situation. So the first thing I gave up was the muffler, which means, okay, now I'm going to catch cold and probably pneumonia because I'm very susceptible to throat issues.
MSF exhibition tour guide Ahmed Abdalrazag says while many choose practical items like Smith, others are prone to bring along sentimental items.
Like, for example, I tell them about a person who fled from Syria. The only thing he took from Syria, a huge picture of his new wife and him. And this is what he carried throughout his journey. Like, people like that, they were in the middle of conflict. Their fault was because they were born in that land.
Otto Gonzalez, an MSF worker and tour guide who grew up in Miami, Florida, as a Cuban refugee, says he has found some beauty amid the very real pain and suffering that he has witnessed firsthand.
I mean, I'm amazed by the resilience of people living in these places, you know, going on and giving of themselves. People who have almost nothing, you know, are willing to give of themselves to help each other. That is the thing that amazes me more than anything else. Their hope that they have, their hope that things will be better. You have to have that, because if you don't have that, you know, everything else is lost.
Ayan Bior, VOA News, Washington.
The editor-in-chief of the Khartoum-based Aljereida daily newspaper says Sudan's National Intelligence and Security Services agents have confiscated more than 10,000 copies of the paper's Tuesday edition. Sudanese authorities did not offer explanation for their action. Nabil Biajo reports for VOA from Khartoum.
Sudan's National Intelligence and Security Service, or NISS, confiscated 10,200 copies of Aljereida newspaper on Tuesday. The editor-in-chief of Aljereida, Ashraf Abdulazim, says the NISS decision to confiscate copies of his paper has cost him and his staff thousands of Sudanese pounds.
The National Intelligence and Security Service means to punish newspapers and impede journalistic work by causing economic losses so that we do more on self-censorship on our editorial pieces.
Abdulazim says, despite several attempts to contact NISS personnel to understand why the papers were confiscated, authorities have refused to communicate with them. Abdulazim says NISS personnel are known for quashing articles that are critical of the government.
I have courageous writers that do investigative journalism and work about issues that concern the common people and challenge the government to do more to improve people's life.
Sudan Information Minister Ahmed Bilal says journalists should be afforded a certain degree of freedom and NISS should not seize papers to censor them.
We are going to the national dialogue on the 10th, and then a lot of laws are going to be amended, the margin of the freedom and the press, and this will be very big.
But Bilal asserts that certain topics will remain off limits to journalists.
I can't say people can speak about the army, about the national security, about these things. Things are going to be improved.
The seizure of Al Jarida papers comes one day after the NISS confiscated copies of a Siha newspaper. Again, security operatives offered no explanation. Journalists in Sudan say NISS doesn't like them criticizing the government, talking about state-sponsored corruption, the wars in Darfur and South Kordofan, among other sensitive topics. Journalists often are forced to employ self-censorship as a survival tactic. There have been numerous confiscations of leading Sudanese newspapers this year by security operatives. For VOA News, I'm Nabil Biagio in Khartoum.
President Robert Mugabe addressed the new session of Zimbabwe's parliament Thursday. All eyes were on the 92-year-old leader, watching for clues to the state of his health and listening for any response he might give to the recent protest against his government. Sebastian Mofu has more for VOA from Harare.
President Mugabe, looking visibly tired, started proceedings by joking with his officials that they had given him the correct speech this time. The president stared talk of mental decline a year ago when he reread a speech he had delivered in parliament a month before. This year, he read out a list of laws that his government wants parliament to amend or introduce to be in line with Zimbabwe's 2013 constitution and to prop up the country's moribund economy. Mugabe ended his speech by saying,
"In conclusion, I wish to remind you, honorable members of parliament, of your sacrosanct duty to enact laws and build institutions that promote development in an environment of peace and national unity. You not only have the duty to enact laws, but to also respect and adhere to them and to our constitution in word, deed, and spirit."
Zimbabwe opposition MPs who had received death threats amid reports that they planned to protest while Mugabe spoke remained subdued throughout the 30-minute speech. Since July, the opposition has teamed up with civic organizations to hold protests against Mugabe and his 36-year rule of Zimbabwe. They accuse his government of failing to fix the economy and disregarding human rights. Authorities have used force to disperse the demonstrations or prevent protesters from gathering to march. On Thursday, Mugabe also said he wanted tighter laws to avoid what he called leakages in strategic areas of the Zimbabwean economy, such as mining and tourism. Leakage is when businesses do not declare their actual profits, depriving the country of tax revenue. The problem has plagued the government for the past decade since the discovery of diamond fields in eastern Zimbabwe and the takeover of the fields by the military. Sebastian Mofu for VOA News, Harare.
That's our show for this Thursday. We now leave you with the song Labia Maro by Mede Muzika. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for listening. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Atane Morosi. Jesus in the dressy,
also a Tiama Bessina Murunia,
Liming
Mutanetino
Songa,
we
got a Tia Purunia,
Purimba,
Mondo Lobina Torafasa, as if.
kuru belemo
walebe amori osomuru nyefuno nene roso eti amabesi.